Thanks, Jolene. So, hello everyone. Yeah, I met some of you, but for the one I didn't meet yet, my name is Luca Boninfani, and I come from, I'm from Italy, but I'm based in Stockholm at Nordita. And I'm very happy to be here, so thank you very much for the invitation. Actually, it's my first time in the whole American continent. Okay, so it's very very happy to finally visit North America. So, yeah. The title of the talk is non-locality in quantum gravity, and we're gonna try to explain what is the meaning that I give to this sentence, non-locality in quantum gravity, because with non-locality sometimes we can mean so many different things. So to do that, basically we'll just start with some introduction, and we're going to basically see why non-locality is important from my point of view, and also the final aim is to try to connect what I think about non-locality also with some other quantum gravity programs, especially what about things that some of you are working on also here at Perimeter. And I'm leaving on Saturday morning, so of course if you have questions, I'll be happy to answer here, so please ask. If I don't have an immediate answer, we can discuss today, tomorrow. The important thing is that it will be very interactive and live discussion, because in this way I think the talk will be more useful. So to just fix notation, let's start with some basic stuff, and we go very slowly and we try to reach the point we want to about non-locality. So let's fix first notation. We work with this mostly positive metric signature, and we fix h bar in c equal to 1. And also for the whole talk, we will just set lambda equal to 0, although maybe not 0 from lambda CDM observation of the...
As far as equal to 1 equal to 0, but... The...
Sorry, C, sorry, that's C.
Okay.
Yeah, H bar and C equal to 1. Yeah, and for now we just set cosmological constant equal to 0. We can say something at the end, but for the whole talk will not be important. So, we know that if we just forget about gravity, and we think about standard model physics, so basically electroweak interaction and strong interaction, we can describe this interaction, I would say, very well in the framework of QFT. Okay, and when we do that, what we usually do is that we start from some guiding principle, and with this guiding principle, we try to constrain the type of Lagrangian, okay, both kinetic term and interaction term in the Lagrangian. And usually what we assume is locality, okay, which means that basically the Lagrangian should just be polynomial in derivatives. That's my definition of locality here. So for instance, you cannot have in your bare Lagrangian some non-polynomial operator. Of course, you can generate non-polynomial operator as quantum correction, but the bare Lagrangian must be local, okay? Then we, of course, assume unitarity.
Gosh.
Unitary, what does that mean? What does that mean? Basically, we have conservation of probability, which is expressed by some unitarity relation on this evolution operator, which will be the S matrix. And also, one important assumption that we make is that the quantum field theory that we use in the standard model must be strictly renormalizable, right? By we strictly renormalizable, we mean that basically the coupling constant, interaction couplings in the Lagrangian have to be dimensionless. Also, of course, we have symmetries, and so on. And basically, so let's say we manage to construct Lagrangian in standard model. Of course, you can say, okay, for instance, I won't stick to normalizability, but if you give up this, you can generate, like, for instance, less, a huge number of possibilities. So strict normalizability is very important to really restrict the number of possible Lagrangian that you can write down. Of course, you also assume usually for dimension. Now the question is, can we try to do something similar also in gravity? Of course, so you ask this, okay, if you want to consider gravity, I would like to ask the same question. Can I achieve all this type of possibility? And we know very well that in, we know very well that if we just take Einstein GR, which will be just given by this simple Lagrangian, where this kappa is just 8 pi g. We know that this Lagrangian if we quantize it in the framework of quantum field theory, it is not renormalizable perturbatively, because if we, for instance, just make an expansion of this type, and we want to write down the Lagrangian for this type of perturbation, what we will have is that there will be some interaction, some kinetic term for the perturbation h mu nu. There will be some kinetic operator, and then there will be interaction term, okay, which will be at least cubic in h. And since this kappa has dimension of mass inverse, the theory is not renormalizable at the perturbative level, right? So you will need an infinite number of contact terms to renormalize your theory in the perturbation theory. And so basically, that's the story about GR. And we say usually that, OK, GR is not renormalizable. What we can do, of course, is doesn't mean that the theory is not compatible with quantum mechanics, because you can still do quantum field theory in an effective field theory approach. You can quantize the theory up to some energy scale. For instance, it can be Planck scale. But then at some point, things can break down. So the wish is to understand whether we can reach some description at even higher energies of the gravitational interaction. And so again, let's go back to our principle there. So the question is, OK, we just notice that GR doesn't work in this sense as a interaction, because we don't satisfy, for instance, renormalizability. But the question is, can we still ask the question, is there any theory of gravity in four dimensions, for instance, that is strictly renormalizable as any other Lagrangian in the standard model? And the answer is yes, actually, because if we write down a Lagrangian of this type, let me just put some parameter with higher curvature. Okay. This type of Lagrangian, okay, is strictly normalizable, okay, which I think, I mean, if you just say, I mean, if you just, I mean, having a strictly normalizable Lagrangian doesn't mean that it's true in any dimension. Actually, this is very important that it's four dimension, okay, but it's a fantastic result. However, this theory, although it's renormalizable, has some is usually claimed to have some pathologies, because, for instance, if you compute the propagator for this theory, for instance, around Minkowski, the propagator will have some GR contribution, which will be just a standard massless graviton. Plus, there will be an extra spin zero degree of freedom that comes from this term here. It will be massive. And then there will be an extra spin two degree of freedom, which is also massive. And it comes from this y squared here. Okay, and these masses are related to this parameter in this way. So there will be m naught squared, which is basically alpha over 2, gamma over 2 alpha here. And then there will be this m2 squared, which is minus a gamma over, this is 6 and 2 beta. Okay, so first of all, one can notice that in order to avoid tachyons in this theory, one should have basically that alpha is positive and that beta is negative. Okay, this is the first constraint. But anyway, this is not enough to make this theory, let's say, healthy in the usual sense, because this minus sign here, okay, basically is just telling us that this extra degree of freedom, this extra massive spin 2 degree of freedom, is a ghost. Because if we read it in terms of kinetic term, it will be a negative, a kinetic term with a negative sign, which basically can create instabilities. At the classical level, for instance, Hamiltonian can be bounded because of this minus sign, while at the quantum level, there can be a problem with unitarity. Okay, and that's what we're going to basically discuss. So basically, I would say that this, in the 70s, if you ask me, for instance, I mean, of course, when you speak about quantum gravity, there could be several opinions. And let's say from a QFT side, I would say this is the problem of quantum gravity. Because what happens is that you try to ask to require strict renormalizability, but you lose somehow something because of this minus sign that creates instabilities. Okay, and the question here is try to understand basically whether by working with higher curvature gravity, we can make sense of a theory of gravity which is both well-behaved in the energy but also ghost-free. Okay, and we will see that no-locality, the introduction no-locality, is one possible way to deal with this problem, to address this problem.
Yeah. Luca?
Yes?
Just one question. Are you aware of a systematic study of four derivative Lagrangians? And are there other theories, or this is just miraculous, the stricter normalizability of this precise theory?
You mean that any theory for the derivative must be strictly normalizable? That's the question, in principle.
The question is, have people studied different shape for the Lagrangian in four derivative, or?
No, so the thing is that if you take a theory of gravity which is metric compatible, okay? So basically, you will have a Civita connection, okay? And you take parity invariant Lagrangian, okay? You take four dimension. This is the theory of gravity that you have, okay? It's this quadratic gravity which is strictly normalizable.
Okay. It's the only
one.
One.
Yeah.
But there's no a top-down proof. It's just a statement of.
No. Is that because you see, if you assume diffeomorphism invariants, these are the type of curvature invariant operator that you can construct.
Well, I could have asked,
Riemann square, for instance.
Yeah.
So basically, what happens is that in principle you can say, okay, I have Ricci square and also Riemann square, right? I mean, I didn't write down.
Oh, no, sorry, I know what you're going to say. Sorry, it's okay.
There is Gauss-Born in four dimension, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And also, you can say, okay, I want to add something like this, which is still four dimensional, like two dimension, but this is a total derivative, so also you don't. So basically, in the end, you can always choose in four dimension two invariants.
No, thank you, sorry.
And usually people choose this combination because this is really spin zero, this is the spin two component. Okay. So, what we're going to do now is to basically try to formulate the question you like to address in a toy model just with a scalar field to understand the problem of this cost, okay? And then we'll try to address the problem in this setup, and we generalize to gravity after. And we will see basically what are the good features and also some open problems, some bad features that you would like to address and discuss, and also see some possible relation with other approaches. Okay, and why this no-locality could be important. So basically, why first we say that unitarity is violated when there is the minus sign. So what we can do, we can just start with some toy model like this that mimic basically the spin two part of the propagator in that theory, right? You can write something like this, for instance. This is a four derivative scalar field whose propagator will be basically this one. And you see what happens, that this is exactly what happens in that theory, because you will have, if you do partial decomposition, you will have this type of propagator here. So there will be one healthy, let's say, massless, and then there will be one massive one which has a minus sign. And why this is a problem with unitarity? Because unitarity, we said, is this relation, right? Conservation probabilities. But you can usually write this in the standard optical theorem form, where you have twice the imaginary part of this transfer matrix T dagger T. And when you go to elements, this means usually that you will have some positivity bound on some element of your S matrix. And what happens that, for instance, the imaginary part of the propagator must be positive, for instance. But what happens here is that if you use the standard prescription, right, the I epsilon a la Feynman, and you compute the imaginary part for this type of operator, for this type of propagator, what you will get here, basically by using just the property of this, by taking the limit epsilon going to zero, evaluating imaginary part and so on, what you will have is that pi times, for instance, this is just an example, right? Mm-hmm. Something like this, right? And because of this minus sign, which is reflected also here, you will have some quantity that is not positive definite. So this term could be negative. At higher loop in perturbation theory will also introduce minus sign, and so you will have a breakdown of unitarity condition. So when we say that ghosts break unitarity, that's what is meant. So the question we'd like to say, to ask is the following. So even some Lagrange of this type, where we have some Lagrange in general. Yeah, what I'm writing here is just some f of box, right? So the question is, can I still have a theory with some higher derivative operator here, but which is Gauss free? Okay. And this way, can I try to generalize, for instance, that theory of gravity there in a way that basically I can make it Gauss free by introducing some higher order operator? Basically, the idea is the following. So we know that this one is sick, but it could be that there is something that we are truncating, which contains like infinite terms. And we see the Gauss problem just because we are truncating an infinite series. This is more or less the logic. Okay. And of course, to ask this question, we should start with some, there is no white. Okay. To answer this question, we should start with some hypothesis on this F of box. Okay, at least physical hypothesis. And what we're gonna assume here, just one assumption for now. And what we will see is that by working the framework of QFT, in principle, the framework gives more options. So it's a lot more richer, of course. Okay. And we'll try to understand what kind of options could be useful to understand also gravity and cure this problem. Okay. So what we want from a bare Lagrangian, usually in QFT, for instance, is that we should recover a nice low energy limit. So what we don't want, from, for instance, for this theory is that the kinetic operator has poles. In principle, the bare Lagrangian, you don't want poles in the kinetic operators. You only want zeros. So for instance, if you assume that f is an entire function, which means it does not have any pole in the complex plane, just by using this assumption and applying the so-called Weierstrass theorem, what you get is this f of box function, where box is just the variable that I'm considering here, can be written in this form, just by assuming that it's entire. Okay, can be written like an exponential of an entire function times all possible zeros that this function has. Okay, where this n is the number of zeros, this I is the multiplicity of each zero. Okay, so basically what you have here is just a very generic type of kinetic operator that you get just by assuming that your function, your operator, does not have any pole, but it can have zeros. Okay, so what happens now is that, of course, this is very general operator, and you see, we can have different possibilities, right? For instance, if we just take, just n equal to 1, gamma equal to 0, and ri equal to 0, what we have is just the standard Klein-Gordon. Oh, I mean, this is trivial, nothing special. Okay. If we take n greater than 1, we can introduce extra poles. It may happen that these extra poles will introduce Gauss, for instance. So, but there is also another thing that we should notice from this, that just by requiring this type of assumption, which is, I would say, well justified as a starting point, we also generate an other possibility in this type of kinetic operator. Basically, operator which are non-polynomial in the derivative. Okay. But they are still higher derivative, but non-polynomial. So for instance, if you imagine that you have this exponential, you can expand it as a Taylor series, you will have infinite number of derivatives. Because you can imagine that your exponential box can be written like n box n, right? Some expansion like this. So you will have what? Infinite number of derivatives entering in your Lagrangian. And this type of operator, they're usually called non-local, just because they are non-polynomial in the number of in the derivative operator. So for instance, if we write down something like this, if we take a Lagrangian this type, okay, what we have here, we can compute the propagator, and the propagator will just be.
Sorry, quick question. Are you expanding gamma like that or e to the gamma like that?
E to the gamma. Gamma is a function of box. Right. Okay. For instance, let's take an example. If you take box equal to box with some coefficient, okay, we're expanding this. Okay, and you will have some zero. Yeah. So for instance, what you have here, in the end, we'll have something like this. Okay, of course, I'm putting a mass here, put it. And you can see immediately that this type of propagator, although it contains an infinite number, let's say, of higher power of p squared when you expand this exponential, this operator is, this propagator is still healthy in the sense of that it doesn't have any extra degree of freedom, because you will have the standard p squared m squared here, and this exponential here does not introduce any new pole. That's because does not introduce any new root, any new zero in the kinetic term. Okay, but if you would expand this exponential, truncate it to some order, you would generate the same problem that you had before. Okay, so just to summarize this in here, that starting from a Lagrangian, which just has like some kinetic operator which has no pole, okay, immediately we have this type of possibility for the kinetic term in our starting Lagrangian. Okay, so the idea is that can we do something similar also for gravity? Okay, and the answer is yes. So if we formulate the same question also for gravity, the question would be the following. What we're going to do now is just like some construction by hand, but then after that we will try to discuss how to justify this possible construction, okay, and how to restrict the possibilities. Okay. So for instance, what we want is a theory of gravity which, that should recover somehow GR in the low energy regime and that may have like some modification in the UV regime. So as before, what we can let's consider in some Lagrangian of this type. So just by assuming the diffeomorphism invariance, in principle, we will have, of course, infinite possibility. But what we are going to do now is just to say, okay, we have the standard Einstein, and then we know that the four derivative theory that we showed before is pathological, if quantized with standard tools, in the framework of perturbative QFT. But what if, for instance, we have something similar to what we have done there? So basically, we will have some operator, for instance, some, let me call it, some f of box here, plus some while box, right? So if you take constant function there, we will recover the same case as before. But in principle, these are not constant, right? And if we ask again, what is the propagator for this type of theory, what you will get that the propagator will have again some spin 2 component, which will have this form. Plus this, the spin 0 part. Now you see, again, if you put some f2 and f0 equal to constant, you will have again the same problem because you introduce extra pole in your propagator. Now the question is there any choice for this function f0 and f2 such that this type of propagator is healthy in the sense that of having no extra Gauss degree of freedom? And of course, I mean, just by hand, you can do some construction. Because if you, for instance, assume something like this, right, that this combination here, so basically this operator f2, is such that you get some exponential of an entire function, call it, and the same for the spin 0. Okay, where this gamma 2 and gamma 0 are some entire function. What we're doing here is that basically we are defining a Lagrangian, a gravitational Lagrangian, which is higher order in derivative. Actually, it's no local because you have these non-polynomial operators. But at the same time, if you quantize it like perturbatively in the framework of QFT, your propagator is cost-free. Okay, just because basically you are making an assumption basically that your four derivative theory must be some truncation of some more let's call it infinite derivative theory. Okay, and of course, this is done just some by hand construction, which is not motivated with any principle, right? We are just saying, okay, let's see which are the possibilities. And these are, let's say, of course, some possibilities that work. But of course, there are problems when you do this type of construction, because when I say, okay, we have constructed something, but we have infinite possibilities for this entire function that could avoid this Gauss degree of freedom. So from my perspective, one of the problems is that basically it's true that no locality can help in dealing with this cost-free construction in gravity. But the problem is that we should try to understand how to constrain this type of operators. And I think that something can be done. And there are different ways in which I think one could try to approach this problem of constraining this non-local gravitational Lagrangian. Maybe before going ahead, if there is any question up to this point, something which is not clear. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first one would be: do you define unitarity on shell, or do you care about poles and ghosts also off shell?
Sure, of course, because off shell you can also have problems. Because you see, when you have, if you have to evaluate at one loop the optical theorem, for instance, you have, I don't know, in some cubic interaction you have something like this. Okay, some one loop diagram. When you evaluate the imaginary part of this one loop diagram, and here you have this four derivative, for instance, operator, so four derivative propagator with 1 over 2k4 behavior. Okay, because of this higher derivative here, what happens is that this off shell propagator here will create a problem. Why? Because usually the optical theorem says the following, that the imaginary part of this loop diagram should be equal, okay, to what? To some phase space integral of the square of this amplitude. Okay, this is just from the optical theorem. So what happens is that if you get some negative contribution here, because of this off-shell pole that will contribute, you will get something which is not positive definite. So basically a violation of unitarity. Yeah. So what happens is that you need to care both about like when you have only three-level diagrams, but also when you have off-shell internal line with this 1 over 2k4 and so on.
So maybe another one. What do you do if f has poles? Then you can't apply Weierstrass?
Sorry?
If the functions f have poles in the Lagrangian.
Yeah. This one, what is it? Yes, this one. Basically, what I'm saying here is that usually, when we start with some bare Lagrangian, we work with kinetic operators that have zeros, but they don't have poles. For instance, you want that you take some energy limit, okay? The limit should be smooth. You should recover something order an equation, for instance, in this type of scalar field theory, okay? But for instance, if you would have some operator like this in the bare Lagrangian, okay, in principle, if you just get this, this could be divergent, okay, in the zero limit. So one should be careful. One sufficient condition to avoid this problem is to require that f is entire. Okay, of course, it's not sufficient necessary. It's only a sufficient condition to avoid this type of problems.
Okay,
yeah. Yes.
Well, if you just stick to linear, you know I'm going to say this.
Yeah, I do not agree with that. But
you choose e to the gamma p squared to be in the numerator, and it's a Gaussian, and you claim your mental space, then all the quantum loops are finite to all orders. You get unitarity, Lorentz event, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think in that case you evaluated the diffeomorphism invariants.
There's no need to go to higher derivative.
Yeah, in my opinion, high derivatives, if you just do standard quantum field theory, are inevitable because you can couple matter with gravity, you generate high derivative immediately. So you need to take care of it.
Well, it's a matter of opinion.
No, it's just opinion. If you do a computation, you generate higher curvature operators.
Yeah. Because I devoted a lot of time and papers to this. But, so it's the reason to go to non-locality is because of the fact that local theory is based on the direct delta function.
Sorry?
In local field theory,
sure, there is a delta function. Yeah.
Which immediately gives you infinities. And but that's the simplest distribution in distribution theory. The next simplest is a tile function. And for Gaussian, it's the very simplest one next to Dirac. And in Clinwell interspace, it all works. I mean, with linear gravity. But that's...
Sure, no, in my opinion, I mean, if you do just matter, even if you don't want to do in quantum gravity, you just say like semi-classical gravity, you couple gravity with matter, you can generate higher curvature operators. So in this sense, you need to take care of them. So I don't see how you could just work with the Ricci, linear Ricci, and make no locality in the Lagrangian and...
Well, then.
But yeah, maybe we can discuss.
With higher derivatives, is
let me.
Ghost poles.
Yeah, indeed, that's so the point.
You have to go to a lot of trouble to get rid of the ghost poles.
You need to go?
You have to go to a lot of trouble to get rid of the ghost poles.
I mean, maybe we can go on. That's what he's discussing.
Sure. Yeah.
We
can
have a debate at
the end. Okay. Yeah. Is there any other question?
Look, I have a question actually. So, you might just tell me I'm completely off track here, but so it seems like you're saying that at a certain point you have to have infinitely many, you know, derivatives, coupling.
No couplings, like infinite derivatives, yeah.
Isn't that one of the very old original motivation of the alpha prime, to all order alpha prime string theory construction?
Yeah, so.
You retrieve, you find gravity, but only in alpha prime small, right? If you keep alpha prime in principle, at any finite value, you have all of them.
Yeah, so I think, indeed, I want to discuss now, also to know your opinion, what do you think, how to constrain these operators. So, for instance, I'm not an expert of string theory, but I know that in the string field theory formulation, or string theory, they actually get in interaction vertices. For instance, if you take the open tachyon in string field theory, it has a Lagrangian of this type, where in the kinetic operator, in the vertex operator, which is equivalent, they have something like this. Okay, so it's exactly the type of exponential. Maybe it's no surprise that it should be an exponential because maybe, I mean, you want to have some smooth limit in the energy and so on, but they get some type of exponentials, which you can also get from here because you just need to invert. Basically, if you write, for instance, this, you can move this exponential in the potential. And so you get exactly that. In this. So it seems that in string field theory, although I don't know anything, but they get this type of non-localities. I don't know if it's related to some type of similar things also in gravity. These are unknown because I never seen there some type of gravitational vertex where this operator appear. But for sure, in this sector of the open tachyon in string field theory, they have this exponential. Maybe if there is some expert in string theory, you can comment. But it could be related then to this type of alpha prime expansion in gravity with higher curvature. I don't know. But for sure, in string field theory, there is something related to that type of exponential. Yeah.
Thank you.
OK. Good.
There is another board under there.
There are so many that I don't know which one.
There's another one.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Just regarding this, one of the first people to do this was Gary Efimov.
I think even before
60 years ago.
I think even before him there was some another one, but I will mention later at the end. I think gravity, the first trying to do this was this type of idea was Kuzmin in the 1987. Krasnov in the 1987. But yeah, anyway. You see, here is just some construction by hand. Let me just mention one thing about, for instance, some implication of this construction. Then we try to understand how to possibly constrain this type of operators, So first, that one thing, once we have a Lagrangian, the first thing one could ask, for instance, what happens to the gravitational potential in this type of theories, right? Because one could say, okay, I have some extra operator here, they should somehow also change the dynamic of your gravitational field, okay? And this is just a simple exercise. One can ask, for instance, how the Newtonian potential gets modified, okay? And for instance, if you just take a simple propagator of this type, where you have the standard GR propagator, but then you have some entire function here, okay, where this entire function here could be, for instance, just for simplicity, we take minus box over some scale that is needed for dimensional reason. This type of propagator would come from a Lagrangian of this type. For instance, you will have 1 over 2 kappa squared, R plus, then there is some combination of Ricci and so on. You have the Einstein tensor, and then you have, for instance, if you take this type of Lagrangian, okay. Yeah, I'm still not motivating this, but this Lagrangian will be important for something I will say at the end. Okay, keep in mind. What happens is that your propagator is just the standard GR times some exponential. So let's make this choice. You can ask, for instance, what is, if you take a point-like source with some mass m, you could ask, for instance, what is the gravitational potential given by this source? Okay, and actually, I mean, you should just solve an equation. What happens is that if you go in the static limit, you will have some type of equation like this. Okay. And actually, this equation, although it's infinite order in derivative, assuming some boundary condition and applying Fourier transform, what you will get basically is that your potential phi will have like the standard Newton times some modification, for instance, that is this error function. If you plot the potential, okay, what happens is that in Newton you will have something like this, but in this case you have some regularization due to this non-locality that you were requiring to solve this Gauss problem. So as a, say, extra implication, you also seems to have some modified potential, which in principle could be useful, I don't know, in some astrophysical application. I don't know this. But for instance, you can even ask, by taking like nonlinear contribution, whether this nonlinear contribution can somehow give rise to some horizonless compact object. Okay. Because for instance, if you take this potential, you impose this condition, okay, you will avoid some zeros in the G00 component. So in principle, you can construct some compact object and so on. And there has been some study along this direction. But this was just to give an example of basically some implication that you get just by starting with this, let's say, reasoning of avoiding extra poles. Now, let's go to the question of how can we constrain this type of functions.
So through this, you can get rid of the singularity in the black hole.
Yeah, the nonlinear level, one should try to solve this complicated nonlinear equations.
This is what happens, actually.
Well, I don't know. No one has shown for that.
I tested myself.
No, I think, no. If you take the field equation for this Lagrangian,
This already happens with R, but I mean, just anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, Kina?
Yes.
Kina, me the side question. So, we have this exponential minus. If it's Euclidean, I can control the sign of that and the size in field space. But in the Lorentzian.
That's why the sign is very important.
So, like, you know, space line will be tamed down. And then
indeed.
So, will be enhanced. So, is that.
So, yeah, indeed. Yeah, so when I say that we should start to understand how to constrain this operator, we should analyze several, we should ask several questions and understand whether they are pathological or not. First, the first thing, so we will have, as we said, these operators, right? The first thing you can ask, say, this should be an entire function, as we said. Okay. Now, unless there is some interaction term that can make things work well, what happens is that when you take, for instance, gamma of this type, with odd powers, okay. As you said, since for space like, so for space like, it will have basically ox, let me go to momentum space, so e square. So for space like, in my convention, mostly positive magnetic signature, space like means this, and time like means this, okay. So for instance, if you take a propagator like this, when you have minus p squared, and then you have the standard gr, okay, what happens that you see, as you said, for time like, for space like is fine because it's convergent, but for time like, you can have divergences. Okay. And this is actually the same type of exponential that appear in string field theory. But they claim that in string field theory, interaction term will somehow cure this problem in the propagator. Now, of course, if you just take some kind of term with a generic potential, in principle, you will have problems. Okay. And in gravity, what happens is that the non-locality appears both in the kinetic term and the interaction term, just because you have some covariant operator to expand, and you will get in both sides. So, if you do an analysis of three-level scattering in gravity, pure gravity, what happens is that basically, well, depending on the starting Lagrangian, this one can be harmless, but in general can create problems. Okay, so for instance, these odd powers here, just because you change time-like and space-like, you can have like different behaviors. So that's why sometimes people, let's say, I mean, in my opinion, should be careful, and if one has to constrain the possibility, should try to avoid this type of ambiguity, time-like, space-like. Okay, but if, for instance, you take, a box with some 2n even powers, okay, this doesn't happen because basically when you go to momentum space, you will have always something like this. So basically, time-like, space-like doesn't really matter.
Just a comment. You can't predict loop graphs.
Yeah.
In quantum field theory, you can't measure virtual loop graphs. So you can do it all in pretty momentum space.
But you have to analytically continue to Minkowski at the end.
It's the tree graph, a different matter. Because you measure them. And then you have to worry about time like space. So for the loop graph, as we always do,
including
momentum space.
But, then you need to anyway analytically continue at the end. No, there is. Yeah, okay. If you remain in Euclidean, there is not. But you need to analytically continue to Minkowski, and you will see the problem in principle.
You can arrange to cancel the entire function so that all the tree graphs are all.
Let me give you an example, maybe. Yes, just an example. If you take this diagram.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this one, for instance, if you want to compute a process, yes, cross section, is the imaginary part of this, which will be equal to the square of this. Okay? The square of this inside here has the exponential. So, although you have loops, the imaginary part of loops will have exponential, And for time like, they can create problems, unless there are very specific interaction terms that cancel that. Okay. Mm-hmm. In principle, they can. These are more pathological than I mean.
That equality only holds local theory.
No, I think no. You can show this equality.
But, anyway.
No, but it looks like it doesn't. But if you say like this, no, I need to answer because. The optical theorem, okay, can be shown to hold true at any order in perturbation theory with this type of exponential. That's why I'm going to discuss that now. But it's not true that this doesn't hold. Because if you say this doesn't hold, then we will break the optical theorem, basically, which is the unitarity condition. Okay. Indeed, let me say a few words on that. Okay. By the way, what time is it?
It's
20
past
3,
so you have 10-15 minutes.
Oh, I want to just mention two things about, and then make some relation with other approaches. So you see here, you said that at three level, this exponential do not introduce any problems. Okay, but it may happen that. When you do loop integral, this exponential can somehow create a problem. Why? Because since you have an exponential of an entire function, okay, and this exponential is itself an entire function, there is a theorem called Liouville theorem that says since this function is non-constant, then in some direction in the complex plane, this function should blow up. Okay. And for instance, if you want to take some propagator, some diagram of this type, what you usually do, you compute this type of diagram, right? Okay. And the non-locality correction will give some exponential here. Okay, and what you usually do to compute this diagram is that you go to momentum space in K naught, in K zero, sorry, in the energy complex plane, there will be four poles that you shift in the standard way. And what happens is that basically, usually you can do, for instance, either the standard Cauchy theorem and you close the contour here, or for instance, you do weak rotation. But this type of procedure do not work for this type of operator because at infinity, you may have divergences that you would hit with the weak rotation. So what happens is that, of course, if this is the case, you don't have any other way to deal with these things, then nothing makes sense, right? But actually, there is a way to deal with these exponential singularities. And the way to deal with this is just a more general way to do contour deformation in the complex plane that also works with standard local theory. So the idea is that basically, this type of amplitudes must be defined in Euclidean along the imaginary axis. And what happens is that any type of contour deformation, okay, should only happen in the finite region of the complex plane. For instance, just to be short, usually in loop diagrams, what happens is that you have pinching singularities, and the pinching singularities are the ones that basically give the branch point, branch cut, and so on, and whatever. And what is the pinching singularity? For instance, if you integrate along the imaginary axis here, for instance, the pinching singularity is when this pole, for instance, moves, because it just depends on external energy, internal intra, and also this one moves, and the contour is hit by left and right by two poles, right? So what we usually do, for instance, in the standard local theory, we can say, okay, we rotate the contour up to some point, okay, until we can. We shift the pole and we take, the integral, and then we take the Feynman shift to zero at the end. Okay, and this way we can make sense of amplitudes. Here it's not possible because of the infinities. So what happens here is that you need to have certain exponential which are convergent along the imaginary axis. And you need to have basically contour deformation only in finite region of the complex plane. So basically what happens is that if you have your pole that moves towards the right, you need to deform your contour in such a way that basically this pole is still on the left, another one is still on the right. And this is possible. You can do that you can cook up, I mean, we can invent this type of contour deformation and show that basically all the Ratowski rule that usually we use in Feynman diagrams and so on, they hold true. That's why what I said before there in the Optimal Theorem, that type of relation, imaginary part equal to square, it holds just because you have this prescription that can be implemented. And this type of prescription also holds for standard local field theory. Okay, just a more, let's say, generic way to compute integrals. So this is another constraint that comes, for instance, from having some well-behaved amplitudes. So basically, your function, okay, exponential, must be at least convergent for, like, in the convex plane, when you take k0 going to plus minus I infinity. And this also restricts a lot the type of possibility you can have. Okay? Because, for instance, you can imagine some transcendental function that doesn't do that. Okay? And this really, I mean, eliminate a huge number of possibility, although there is still an infinite number of choice there. Okay. Another way to constrain this type of form factors is try to understand, for instance, how amplitudes behave at a high energy in several kinematic regime. And also there, one can get some lower bound on amplitudes, for instance. There is not much time, I'm not going to go into details, but even by assuming, so in standard local field theory, there is the so-called Martin-Serlus bound on how fast an amplitude can decay. In local field, there is another bound, and this bound must be satisfied. And also that restricts the class still a lot more. But the problem is that the number of possibility for this operator is still very big. Okay, so what could be a way to make sense of this no-local Lagrangian and try to find them useful? Because if we have many Lagrangian that can work well, okay, it's like that we have, I mean, something that is not very predictive because you have many possibility that, okay, they work, but which one we're going to use to make some prediction, for instance, right? That's the whole point. And I mean, I took too much time to explain things, but for instance, there could be some, just to conclude, I mean, there could be some possibility, right? Because here, just by hand, we wrote down some Lagrangian. But it could be that in some quantum gravity programs, okay, this Lagrangian can somehow, in some form, come out and be useful. Now, I spoke about no-locality, where with no-locality, I really meant some non-polynomial structure in the form factors in the Lagrangian. And actually, I would say that in many quantum gravity proposal, it looks like that this no-local, I mean, some type of no-locality is expected. I'm not speaking about standard quantum correction no-locality, like a logarithm box, but I'm speaking about some analytic, for instance, or UV no-locality. Okay. For instance, it could be that some of you are also expert in that, that in asymptotic safety gravity, so basically which is one possible approach to quantum gravity, it could be that there the effective action will contain some no-localities at the end. And of course, you want your effective action at the end to be Gauss-free. So somehow, to be Gauss-free, there should be some analytic structure that can help in the propagator. So you should expect something like that, for instance. Or it could be that you have some approach from quantum gravity that could be of a different nature, which is not based maybe on standard QFT. It could be, I don't know, spin foam models or loop quantum gravity. And also there is important, I think, to describe some continuum limit, okay, from discrete to continuum. And then you will get some effective Lagrangian. It looks like that even in those scenarios, no locality will appear. Okay. For instance, there was a recent paper by Bianco where some type of no locality appear in this type of form. So basically, we'll have some, let's call it some no local modification in the spin 2 part of your propagator. And of course, again, to make sense of this Lagrangian, there should be some condition that must be respected. Okay, here we were just putting that by hand, and maybe by starting from some first principle, one can try to constrain this type of no locality. Indeed, there are, I was always saying, examples where you get some type of form there. But the last thing I think that I started thinking about that only recently, and that I find interesting is that, I mean, I hope there will be some discussion about this, is that, okay, you see, here I just modified the dynamics. Just Lagrangian modifying the Lagrangian and try to see what happens. But I never spoken about the kinematics. Okay. And I'm trying to do quantum gravity here, to speak about quantum gravity. But could it be, I mean, that to really make sense of things and to constrain the type of also framework that I'm using, that also the kinematics somehow should play a role? And actually, there is one of the first people I think that spoke about locality in the past. It was Max Born. Okay, because Max Born in the 40s, okay, was crazy about something. Because as we said before, right, you have to constrain Lagrangian. To constrain Lagrangian, you have to start from somewhere. And for instance, if you start from this principle here, you can do something. And it looks like that maybe in gravity, this construction doesn't work. Maybe something must be given up, or something maybe must be added. And I would like just to mention this, because some of you are also expert in this field, is the following, that in the 40s, what happened is Max Born said, OK, maybe quantum mechanics and general relativity are not compatible because somehow, for instance, in quantum mechanics, or even if you take just Hamiltonian analytical mechanics, if you look at the, for instance, if you look at the Hamilton equation, okay, which describes the dynamics, right? These Hamilton equations are invariant if you do this type of transformation, right? If you send x in p and p minus x. And this type of transformation was called by Born reciprocity transformation. Okay, and he was saying, okay, you see, in quantum mechanics, actually, this is somehow seems somehow to be true, because even if you take, for instance, a computational relation, you have some type of object that satisfy this type of symmetry transformation. So he was basically saying, okay, maybe we can build some theory of the interaction based on this type of principle, okay, that he called basically reciprocity principle. Okay. Now the thing that I learned recently is that in few of his papers in the 40s, just by assuming reciprocity, this type of transformation, what he shows somehow, the complete proof is still not completely clear to me, but what he shows that if he starts from there and he applies that to, for instance, QED, he's able to generate some type of non-locality in the Lagrangian. And the type of non-locality that generates, maybe it's not surprising, but it has some type of exponential of something. And for instance, in QED, what he does starting from that type of symmetry that he adds in his starting point, for instance, for the QED, he gets an equation of this type, for instance, Lorentz gauge. But we have some source term here, where you have an exponential of box. Okay. And he wrote this in several papers. Okay. Now, I find, okay, first this is a bit fascinating because somehow from some first principle, we are able to select some type of non-local Lagrangian, okay? But the thing which is even more interesting is that what is the, basically, bottom line here is that basically to understand maybe non-locality in gravity, try to constrain it, is not enough to just touch the dynamics, but maybe also the kinematics must be touched. Because Born's reciprocity, what requires basically is that space-time is not an absolute concept, but maybe even measurement of distances may be like energy dependent. Because for instance, if you go in gravity, what you do in gravity usually is that you deform only half, let's say, one part of the phase space. You don't deform the whole phase space, right? You don't curve the whole phase space. You only curve the position, the coordinate space. So what maybe should happen to make sense of this non-local Lagrangian, even in gravity, is that you should start from some generalization of your line element, which should not be four-dimensional, but maybe eight-dimensional, okay, where you don't have just the standard part that corresponds to, let me say just half phase space, but we'll also have something which in general could be different, where you will have your energy momentum space part, and momentum phase space part. And actually, this is what motivated Born in the 40s, to write down, introduce some type of non-locality in QED. Then all these went lost. I don't know, by chance I found this. But I found this somehow interesting, because maybe it could be that in gravity, to make sense of dynamics, try to modify dynamics, we should also care maybe about the kinematics. And by really touching both of them, okay, and maybe trying to understand better this, it could be that we could somehow select one, I mean, we could restrict and select some type of null Lagrangian. If it is possible, it's nice because you have then some unique answer. You can use it to make some prediction. And then if you see there are pathologies, you just rule it out. And somehow you can also falsify maybe the starting assumption. So the point here is that, just to summarize and close, there are like possibility as a proof of principle, there are possibilities to basically constrain, to construct gravitational Lagrangian, which are higher derivative or even like infinite derivative, that they have, let's say, a good energy limit. They are free of Gauss. They may have a good behavior, but they are too many. Okay. And the point is, I think the open problem here is try to constrain this class of function. And one way could be maybe just to understand either whether this Lagrangian could come from some approach, or just try to understand the starting principle, the starting guiding principle. And one example could be this reciprocity principle, which may even be related to this principle of local relativity. I don't know. I'm not very familiar with that. But there could be maybe some relation to even try to understand how these principles are reflected in the dynamics, okay, and try to make them work in gravity. So with this, yeah, we'll just, I think, stop. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Shoka. First, let's start by question from students, if there is any. By students first. Online, no one is there. Okay, so go for it, Bianca.
So you mentioned that Born has that in this paper, the equation was exponential minus alpha fox.
Yeah, he gets some of this equation.
Yeah, but then you exactly have this problem with blowing up and then.
Sorry? Yeah, sure. So I think.
Comment on
sure.
The paper?
Yeah, so he doesn't comment on this. Okay, for instance, in his case, I mean, because he has in mind some, like, I don't know, Euclidean version of this in the papers. There are more papers, actually, 3-4 papers where he shows explicit this equation. But I would like to understand better if, like, by starting from this assumption, one can really have some other healthy possibility for these operators. Now it looks like that you see this one is a Gaussian, and why he gets this Gaussian from what I understood. So this is a Gaussian, right? Just a square. And usually the Gaussian is in his language self-reciprocal because the Fourier transform is equal to his starting. But yeah, maybe. But requiring this is not the only possibility to have this type of reciprocity relation. And so I'm really curious to understand whether we can really try to make something, I mean, very rigorously, in a rigorous way, in some gravitational context where you really have to curve your background, right? Your metric. And maybe it could be that really by touching both kinematics and dynamics, I can try to really get more unique answer for this Lagrangian.
And another general question, because you were a bit short on the possibility to restrict your as a form. So how far can you restrict?
Yeah. So basically, so I think that if you don't add something else like this, okay, in principle you have an infinite of possibilities. And
so it's mostly unitarity you're looking at.
Okay. Unitarity, you can also ask for it to have still some particular property in UV that allow you to use the standard renormalization theorem, because you can choose some entire function that behave polynomial at infinity. And since they behave polynomial at infinity, you can use some theorem of Condor terms that will allow you to basically renormalize things in the UV. But in principle, you still have if you do not add anything, you still have infinite possibilities, because the entire function are very generic. Now it looks like, for instance, I'm not saying that I understand that, but in string theory, they of course have an S matrix approach. The idea could be try to understand from there what kind of action can be reconstructed by starting from some amplitude. And maybe there also you will get an exponential. This of that type in some effective description at the level of the Lagrangian. But I think just by starting from in this way, by hand construction, you will have always like possibilities. And either use some approach or you start introducing some new principle. And the only one I thought of recently was this type of reciprocity, because I found it and I found it somehow interesting. Mm-hmm. That for the first time, even before Efimov, this guy, and so on, in the 40s, Bohr was the first guy to mention this type of exponentials, because he was still, there was the year in which renormalization was not still understood. Okay, and of course, in QED, maybe these are not needed, but in gravity, since we anyway, we are deforming part of the first space with curvature, it could be that something must be done in this sense, both at the kinematical and dynamical level. Okay. And you see, if maybe this is the only possibility in gravity that you get, it could be also a good way, because then you say, okay, I started with the assumption, I got this as a theory of gravity with some exponential box, which is maybe unhealthy, then I can falsify my starting point, which is fantastic, because the problem with quantum gravity today is that we don't have experiment, we don't have many experiments that can really help us to guide us so much. We have something, but I mean, I don't want to go there, but I mean, the thing is that, the problem is that we have too many choices, and most of them are not even falsifiable. So it's nice to have something which is falsifiable. And I think this could be an example, okay, of a falsifiable approach in principle. If it's really a unique answer that you get by assuming the starting point.
I ask something. So the reciprocity, this one, because in string theory, when you write the higher derivatives, you also use a
t-duality. T-duality. Yeah.
T-duality.
Yeah.
So do you think this is similar to what you do use in string theory?
Again, I'm not expert in string theory, but I know, for instance, Oran has worked on t-duality thing and a meta string theory. And there, I think there is some relation between this Born reciprocity and t-duality, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but somehow I didn't see in string theory this type of non-locality appearing in this t-duality construction. So I don't know if even there something is missing the dynamics. Because usually I think there you're interested in some quantum description of space-time, okay, which is maybe more like kinematical level. It could be interesting to see really how some effective Lagrangian description will look like. And maybe it could be that this non-locality will appear. And the answer in that case will be just unique. You will have just one type of non-locality that corresponds to this type of starting point. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was wondering, so you said that it's difficult to constrain these form factors, and could you, for example, think about coupling it to meta and then using properties or the influence of gravity on meta degrees of freedom to further constrain the form factors by saying, I also want a consistent meta theory that in the infrared agrees to what we can observe.
So if matter can help to constrain. Still, I mean, so for instance, you can write down Lagrangian of this gravity there, which is super normalizable, okay, with the local matter coupled to it. So in principle, if you just take the local matter, you can find functions that are still suitable, okay. And yeah, so I really don't know if matter can do something more in this sense, but yeah, I don't see at the moment how matter could help. Yeah.
Yes.
So, just regarding the last column, when you do non-local string theory, you don't need infinite renormalizability. So there's no point why you have renormalizability.
No, but I think that we're speaking about different type of non-locality. That's why. The terminology is the same, but
so this is very interesting what you're doing. The problem with this is that
with this one.
Yeah, this is a very interesting idea. Is that you have a curved momentum space and a curved X space, because what you do, you're doing 4D. When you have a curved space time, you lose the Fourier transform.
For in curved space-time, of course. You cannot use the standard, yeah.
So, it's like, I'm working with this, and I try to invent to analyze the Fourier transform, and I was entirely happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're in curved space-time. In fact, curved space-time is a big problem. And I think Laurent would agree with this.
Yeah, sure.
Just a last, let's have a last question by Laurent.
I have a question about, you touched upon it, phenomenology. So do you have kind of specific tests in mind? I mean, if I understand correctly, this is kind of a UV.
Is there
feedback in some infrared? Is there some generic feature that we
I think infrared, you will not, I think, see things. The only way to really see some effect once you have some unique Lagrangian that you can use is in the early universe cosmology, I think. Because in that case, you will reach early universe cosmology. So there are studies by Starobinsky, other people with this Lagrangian, where they compute, for instance, the tensor to scalar ratio between tensor power spectrum and scalar power spectrum, and you get modification there. But still, of course, this modification depends on the type of function that you choose. And until you don't have like a unique Lagrange that you can use by starting from something, I think it's quite, it's not a good way to really do phenomenology because you have infinite possibilities to infinite type of Lagrangians. So that's why I think, at least, I don't know if some people try to do something like this in gravity, but it would be really nice to understand at least whether by adding one new principle, which would be just related to the fact that space-time is not absolute, okay? Just by the assumption, if it's true that no locality must follow in this form, okay, like with some type of non-polynomial structure. Because if this is true in gravity, then it's anyway, first, an interesting result. Second, is a way to falsify this reciprocity principle, which I think is still also very interesting. And up to my knowledge, no one is trying to understand this in some higher curvature gravity construction. But for instance, if you want just to mimic Born argument, you would say that maybe in gravity, one has to see what happens really here. Because here he's assuming self-reciprocity in terms of Fourier transform equal to the function and so on. But in gravity, you would write maybe something like this. Equal to the menu, right? And this type of equation can be obtained from an action which is higher curvature, and contains the exponential of box. Okay. So, it would be somewhat interesting to see whether one can really constrain this type of local operators. I call this kinematics, let's say, from this phase space construction, which are based on some principle. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Luca, for this talk.
Thank you.